Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation on the south of the 12th Hour. And the Elgin, Texas today is December 14, 2023, or it is the second day of Chisper 2027. We will start our first service day with a song to be named, and then we'll go into our main sermon entitled The Church Entering Into and in the Harvest Period. Well, this is a sound like it's a timely title to have for the church, because we are in the time of the harvest of the 12th prayer college hour. We have been since 2002, Hermit Church. So therefore, B.T. Hollifield wrote this sermon. He gave it on December the 28th, 1946. We're going to start. First, we're going to have our prayer. Pray, Heavenly Father, now that as we go into your reading, that you give us understanding as the reading of your word. It says, no matter how great and how effective a revival and reformation, even Yahweh himself may launch in his church, the scriptures make it plain that both the sinners and the saints will be in the church until the harvest. For we understand that the 144,000 will be the first fruits harvest when this great harvest begins, and that Yahshua will have come back from heaven, taking the reins in his own hands and his church, and he will bring forth the first fruits harvest out of the Adventist church. No one need to brag that the members of his church are all saints, that they are all of the one accord. If they really are at one accord, then it must be that they are all terrors, that there is no saints among them, that for certainty is not the church of which the Yahshua speaks in his word. If anything is plain in the Bible, this one thing is. Now, let us turn unto the 13th chapter of the Matthew. Matthew 13:24-25. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, for the kingdom of the heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. For the reason given for the tares to be among the wheat is that men slept. Plainly then, if the men had slept, or if the men had kept awake, the enemy would not have sown the tares. Now, to ascertain what it means for men to be awake, we shall read from the third chapter of Matthew, verse 5 and 6. Then went out to him Jerusalem and all of Judea and all of the region round about at the Jordan, and were baptized, all of him, in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. If you recognize the present truth, the first thing you do is you confess your sins, for everybody certainly have them. For this scripture makes plain that the John baptized many, and that those whom he baptized were only those who confessed their sin. Matthew 3:7-8. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come unto his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of the vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring ye forth therefore fruits meet for the repentance. Though these were the popular groups of the John's day, he not only refused to baptize them, but also plainly and politely gave them to understand that the baptism is not something with which to cover sin, but something with which to wash them away. He made it clear that he was not in the business of the making hypocrites, for the John left no doubt in their minds that the Yahweh did not have need of them, but that they had need of him. For the Pharisees and the Sadducees then went away with the full knowledge that the great wide awake preacher of the day was not taken up with their popularity, much less with their pedigree. In the view of the John's firmness of the purpose, and the fact that the Yahshua said to the Son, no greater prophet than he hath ever risen, we know that John was wide awake, and so all the preachers are, or should be as well today. We as the members of the church too should be awake, as was John, Elijah John the Baptist, and as firm as was Job, being able to say, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Job 13:15. Matthew 22:9-12. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid unto the marriage. So, these servants went out into the highways and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good. And the wedding was furnished with the gifts. And when the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he saith unto him, Friend, how camest thou in hither not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. So the Yahweh's servants be awake and do their work right, yet some of the members may fail for the putting on of the wedding garment. For a garment is something for the putting on with the outside, on the outside of the body. For the garment therefore denotes a daily Yahshua-like deportment, as the righteousness of the Yahshua in the one's daily life. For the fact that the man in the parable is speechless when asked, Friend, how camest thou in hither not having a wedding garment? Shows that he is guilty of the neglect, not of the ignorance, for he was without excuse, and he knew it. Let us go back unto the Matthew 25:1-5. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto the 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth for the meeting of the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil and their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. Again, it plainly appears that the church membership is divided into the two classes. First as the wise and the foolish. For the wise take no chances, for they continually search for the oil, that is the present truth, at all times, and they fill their vessels with it at the first opportunity. For the foolish, though, see no need for any more than what is in their land, for they are satisfied with what they already have. For the oil, as a substance used for lighting the lightning ahead of one's path, obviously is figurative of the prophetic truth. For the truth that lightens the heart by the unveiling of the future, concretely speaking, the lamp filled with the oil denotes that the individual's reservoir of the truth in the action as a truth that meets his needs only for the time then present, for the extra oil in the vessels, therefore, represents the additional food. And the truth that takes up where the old truth leaves off. In the other words, as the oil and the lamps, and the oil and the vessels represent two revealed truths, at the two different times, then one following the other. For the example, while the judgment for the dead is present truth in the action, the judgment for the living is the present truth to go into the action as soon as the present truth judgment for the dead is over. Obviously, all that has been consumed is the oil and the virgin's lamps represents past truth, truth that has accomplished its purpose. But the oil and the vessel represents truth ready to be activated and made to shine immediately after the oil and the lamps is consumed. Since the 10 virgins represents the church membership during the judgment of the dead, okay, so that would be from 1844 to 2002, and that would be the period for the judgment of the dead that was taught and took place in the 10th and the 11th parabolic hours on your parabolic time clock, okay, during the sixth seal. Okay? For the oil and the lamps manifestly represents the truth of the judgment for the dead. For the extra oil that is in the vessels must therefore represent the truth of the judgment for the living, as the additional truth. Plainly then, the lamps gone empty represents the present judgment for the dead, as the present judgment for the dead passing away. And the oil in the vessels represents the present truth of the judgment for the living going into the action, since all ten had oil in the lamps. Let's do that again. Since all of the ten virgins had the extra oil, no, had the oil in their lamps, not the extra oil. Let's do that again. Since all of the ten virgins had the oil in their lamps, very only half of them had the oil in the vessel, for the symbolism clearly discloses that, as always, the whole church membership did not accept the message of the present truth judgment for the living. And I will say that took place in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, for the judgment of the living was inaugurated the Passover of 2002 at Gilead Center in Kermit, Texas, the third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Advent, with the last prophet in charge of the candlestick of lead, or seal of Revelation 3:14, as the Reverend Teddy Johnson, with the inspiration for the bringing the Seventh-day Adventist Church to a close, for bringing to an end of the sixth seal, for bringing to the end of the judgment for the dead, etc., etc. For the foolish virgin were satisfied with the truth that they had acquired while joining the church that bore the message of the judgment for the dead, but failed for the acquainting of themselves with the additional message as the message of the judgment for the living. Finally, after the necessity for it became imperative that they began for the searching for it, but it did them no good, for they were too late getting it. For these were left out with the terrorists only because they let the devil sow in their hearts. I want to reread that. For these were left out, he said, with the terrors, but there are five foolish virgins. Well, I guess that they were not classified as terrors. So let's read that again. For these were left out with the terrors only because they let the devil sow the terrors in their hearts, seeds of the foolishness, seeds of the contentment, lukewarmness with the initial truth by which they joined the church. Thus they mistakenly felt no need of the additional light from the Yahshua. But when the prophecy began to fulfill itself beyond the scope of the divinely revealed knowledge, and as they saw the events of the gospel shaping themselves contrary unto their expectations, and as they saw the events of the unfolding of the present tense prophecy shaping themselves contrary unto their expectations, they became alarmed and confused and saw themselves in the distress. For the lesson is unmistakable. Those who forever feel rich and increased with the good and in the need of nothing more will not get to the door on time. Besides the terrors among the weak, there are idlers, inactive folk who are to be cast out and destroyed with the terrors. Let us read about that. Matthew 25:14-30. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, unto another 2, and to another 1, unto every man according unto his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Now these 3 servants represents a local work that is to be done by Yahweh's servant, and that means in the United States exclusively. And if in another parable where he has 10 servants that he reckoned with to carry on his work, then that means that the world universal that they are to work in. But the 3 servants by themselves are to work only in one geographical location, and that is in the earth, which is prophecy is the United States. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received the 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received the 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Yahshua's money. After a long time, the Yahshua of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received the 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Master, Yahshua, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. For his Yahshua said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Yahshua. He also that had received the 2 talents came and said, Master, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents besides them. His master said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee a ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Yahshua. Then he went, he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Yahshua, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and getting where thou hast not sowed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. We'll call it his master here. For his master answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not sowed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money unto the exchanger, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath the 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he that shall have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath, and cast ye the unprofitable servant unto the outer darkness, that shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now this third and unprofitable servant that hid his master's talent, that came and gave it back to him, that represents in our time Brother Stephen Johnson. He was this third servant. And when it was told after Yahshua judged him, those standing by said, take from him his talent and give it to the one that has 10. For antitypically, Elijah David, about to enter into the judgment of the living, to take the lead from Brother Johnson, 2002, he's the one with the 10 talents. And so the fact is that I inherited Brother Johnson's creation calendar, showing that that is a true parable about that third servant, that slothful servant that had to give his talent to the one that had 10. Okay. From this parable, it is seen that when a believer, a converted believer, falls asleep, then the Satan will come along and he will sow the seeds of the idleness in his heart, so as to cause him to be cast out with the tares at this commencement of the harvest. Therefore, this cast of the tares is as the first for the tearing as such. For it is the high time for the learning that religion is not an opiate. There is still another class of the church members that in a different way call victims with the tares. This we shall see from the reading of Matthew 25:31-46. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and the person now here in these last days in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now, in the judgment of the living, in the harvest time of verse 60, that's when he comes back from heaven. He takes charge of the first harvest of the 144,000, personally harvests them himself out of the Adventist church, and all of the holy angels with him. Then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And what throne is that? That's the throne of David, Luke 1:32-33. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them as one from another, as a shepherd divided his sheep from the goats. And he shall sit the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come ye blessed of my Father, and inherit the kingdom of the heaven here on the earth, prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And that's the kingdom that Yahshua had come from heaven and set up the foundation himself for it. For I was a hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in the prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Yahshua, when saw we thee and hungry, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee a drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was in hunger, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in, naked, and you clothed me, not sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Master, when saw we thee and hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in the prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it not unto one of the least of these, you did it not unto me. And they shall go away into the everlasting punishment, but the righteous into the life eternal. Okay, so when do you become righteous here on earth? When you receive the message of the righteousness by faith in the blood of Yahshua, then it teaches you how to become righteous 100%, or it should at least. For the most outstanding sin of the great class of the professed believers is that they are all for the self and none for others. For the sheep class are the opposite and the caribou, since those who do charity work are not to make a display of it, not to let the left hand know what the right hand is doing, that the sixth tree. And since the system of such benevolent work is clearly pointed out in the Hebrew economy, we would do well to look there for the promoting of the assembling of the people for the religious service, as well as for the providing for the poor, as a second tithe of all the increase was required concerning the first tithe. For the Yahshua had declared, I have given the children of the Levi all of the tenth and the Israel. But in regard unto the second, he commanded, Thou shalt eat before the Yahshua thy Savior, in the place that he shall choose for the placing of his name there. For the tithe of thy corn, and of thy wine, and of thy oil, and the firstlings of thy herds, and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Yahshua. Let's go back to the Father. Fear the Yahweh, thy Yahweh always. Thus the tithe are its equivalent in the money. They were for the 2 years for the bringing unto the place where the sanctuary was established. Well, the sanctuary, as we know it today, is established right here at our headquarters here, out in the country, between Elgin and Lexington, was established after presenting a thank offering unto Yahweh, and a specified portion unto the priest. The offerers were to use the remainder for a religious feast, in which the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow should participate. Thus the provision was made for the thank offerings and feasts at the yearly festivals, and the people were drawn unto the society of the priests and Levites, that they might receive the instruction and encouragement in the service of the Yahweh. For the patriarchs and prophets, this verse is taken from page 530 by the Ellen G. White, for this work to be carried out systematically by the Yahshua's treasury through the gifts and free will offerings, sometimes called second tithe, we cannot but do. Because likewise, if we are to find favor with Yahweh. Now, going back unto the Matthew 13, verse 44, again, the kingdom of the heaven here on the earth, fulfilling Daniel 2, 44 and 45, that is set up in the days of these kings, in the last days, shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom with his son Yahshua, that shall never be destroyed or done away with, but it shall stand forever. It's like unto the treasure hid in a field, under which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for the joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Matthew 13, 45, 46. Again, the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking of the goodly pearl, who when he had found one pearl of the great price, went and sold all that he had and brought it. For these parables distinctly point out that those who do not care to invest everything they possess, if need be, for the obtaining of the kingdom of heaven here on earth, and the kingdom is right here brought to your front door. All you have to do is accept the truth, abide by his principles and statutes and judgment, be born again, and you are automatically in the everlasting kingdom of heaven, right here on earth, ought to be cast out with the church. Okay, it says Matthew 13, 47, 48. Again, the kingdom of heaven. Oh, let's go to the next paragraph. A net cast into the sea naturally catches its good and bad, small and large fish. But fish, like all other living creatures, move in the family, each species with its kind. And so each time the net is cast, it cannot, or before it touches the family of fish, so it is that the gospel net, in the many instances, naturally brings in the families and relatives all under one test, that is, as the parents accept the gospel of Yeshua, along with them are often brought the children and even relatives and friends. For the bad fish represents those who, with the real knowledge, conviction, and conversion of their own, but through the emotion and the influence of the others, join the church. So it is that those who never studiously, wholeheartedly, and zealously take a hold of the principles of the Yeshua are cast out. Therefore, the perishing with the tares, and who are too lazy for the studying, and who give the devil a chance for the sowing of the devilish seed in their heart, making them believe that the preacher or the minister will take them through the pearly gates, having no experience of their own, or cheated of the eternal life. They instead get the eternal death. True enough, the Spirit of Yahweh causes people to become one thing, and the spirit of the Satan causes them to become another thing. But the difference is discernible only as the harvest time approaches, when the truth of the harvest is revealed. From these simple parables comes the fact that the Satan raises terrors in the church and ever tries his level best to keep them in it. Why? Let us find the answer in Revelation 12, verse 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. When the devil saw that he was no longer permitted entrance into the heaven, he went back to the earth for the persecuting of the church, the house of Israel, after she brought forth the man-child. And that was the apostolic church of the 12 apostles. For the Yeshua, the dragon, therefore, is to persecute the church in her apostolic period, and a typical apostolic period. Revelation 12:14, and unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, and to her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent, because of the persecution the church was given the means by which to take her flight from the promised land, the vineyard, and to the land of the Gentiles, the wilderness. Revelation 12:15. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. At the beginning, the serpent persecuted the church, but as he saw that the church still grew and prospered, he reversed his tactics and began instead to persecute the pagans who would not join his church, and raised ministers by whom to bring in a flood of the unconverted into his Roman, pagan Rome. In the first century, by which the paganized apostolic church in the first century, so that she could not Christianize them. Revelation 22:16. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Thus is the church purified, and thus are the terrors destroyed. As the terrors they are burned, as the unprofitable workers, they are cast into the outer darkness. There to weep and to gnash their teeth as unfit guests for the wedding. They are bound hand and foot and cast out into the outer darkness. As the foolish virgins, they are refused entrance. As the guests, they are sent into the everlasting punishment. As the dragons fled, they are swallowed by the earth. But the actual thing that happens to them all in the common is fully described in the Ezekiel prophecy of chapter 9. And let us turn unto that chapter, verse 1 through 11. For he cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, charge them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his slaughter, with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with the linen, with the writer's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of the Yahweh of the Israel was gone up from the church, whereupon he was come unto the threshold of the house. And he called unto the man clothed, Yahshua, with the linen, his son, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And Yahshua said unto him, go to the midst of the city, to the midst of Yahweh. No, and Yahweh the Father said unto him, his son, Yahshua, go to the midst of the city, to the midst of Yahweh, and set it mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that is done in the midst thereof. And unto the others he said in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city and smite, that not your eyes spare, neither have you pity. Say utterly, old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house, and he said unto them, defile the house, and fill the courts with the slain, go ye forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass, while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried, and said, Yahweh, wilt thou destroy all of the residue of the Israel, and thou point out of thy fury upon the Yahushua? And said he unto me, for the iniquity of the house of the Israel and Judah, the 12 tribes collectively, is exceeding great, and the land is full of the blood, and the city full of the perverseness. For they say that the Yahshua, the Son, has forsaken the earth, and the Yahshua seeth not. And as for me also, mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, the man, filled with the linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the matter saying, I have done as thou hast commanded me. For the promise to purify yours from Judah and Israel stands as sure as any promise in the word. For the terms Jerusalem, Judah, Israel, you know, cannot be applied unto any thing but unto the one church, the place where everyone should sigh and cry against the abomination. Those who do not sigh and cry are to be left without the mark, and then the angels who have charge of the church smite every one of them, old and young, both maids and little children and women. Only those who have the mark shall be left. They are the remnant. As the angels are thus to take care of both the wheat and the tares, yes, there is to be a clean riddance of the every sort of terror, just as anciently there was a clean riddance of all of the firstborn in the household that failed to paint the doorpost with the sacrificial blood on the evening of the Passover in the land of Egypt. So shall it be at the commencement of the harvest, and the public purification of the church, for the angels shall smite everyone who falseth the abominations in the midst thereof. When does this thorough purging take place? For the answer, let us turn unto Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. I will utterly consume all things from off the land, saith Yahweh. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of the heaven, and the fishes of the sea, and the stumbling blocks with the wicked, and I will cut off man from off the land, saith Yahweh. Here's the promise of Yahweh. It's to thoroughly cleanse the land, and I am sure none of you will say that these prophecies have ever been fulfilled. Zechariah 1, 4 and 5. I will also stretch out my hand upon the Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place, and the name of its Cherubim with the priest, and them that worship the host of heaven upon the housetops, and them that worship and that swear by the Lord, and that swear by the Malcolm. Not only the land, but the people that are to make up the house of Judah are to be cleansed. And that house of Judah is the house of David, Judah the lawgiver. There is to be a clean land and a clean people as well. Zephaniah 1, verse 6. And them that are turned back from the Yahshua, and those that have not sought the Yahshua, nor inquired for him, for the backslider and the indifferent. Now, we've had the backslider, Gilead Center, 2002, the whole church backslid. And those who are unstable and those who see no need of the other are to perish along with the tares. Zephaniah 1:7. Hold thy peace at the presence of the Yahweh, for the day of the Yahweh is at hand. For the Yahweh has prepared his sacrifice, he has bid his guests. This is the long expected great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, the Son. Zephaniah 1:8. And it shall come to pass in that day, in the day of the Yahshua's sacrifice, that I will punish the princes and the king's children and all such as are clothed with a strange apparel. Zephaniah 1:9-11. And the same day also will I punish all those that leap on a threshold which fill their master's houses with the violence and deceit. And it shall come to pass in that day, says the Asher, that there shall be the noise of a cry from the fish gate, and a howling from the second, and a great crashing from the hills. How ye inhabitants of Megiddo, for all the merchant people are cut down, all they that bear the silver are cut off. For the great crashing shall be from both the fish gates and from the hills, from the land and from the sea. Both the servants that bring violence and deceit upon their master's houses and the wicked masters themselves shall be punished. Zephaniah 1:12-18. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with a candle and punish the men that are settled on their leaves that stay in their heart. For Yahshua will not do good, neither will he do evil. Therefore their goods shall become a booty and their houses a desolation. They shall also build houses, but not inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards, but not drink the wine thereof. For the great day of the Yahshua is near. That's the sun. It is near and hastens greatly, even the voice of the day of the Yahshua. For the mighty man shall cry there bitterly. That day is a day of the wrath, a day of the trouble and distress, a day of the wasting and desolation, a day of the darkness and gloominess, a day of the clouds and of the thick darkness, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fenced cities and against the high towers. And I will bring distress upon men, that they shall walk like the blind men, because they have sinned against the Yahweh, and their blood shall be poured out as the dust, and their flesh as the dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Yahshua's wrath, but the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy. For he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land. For the time of the day of the Yahshua is pointed out by the increased wrath, trouble, distress, wasteness, desolation, darkness, and gloominess, a time in which no one knows what to do to avert the disaster, a time of so much fear, even by the cities that are best fortified. So far as I know, there has never been the like. For the world's condition of today is the only condition that meets the challenge of these prophecies. Since this is true, then this is the day in which the Yahshua is to search Jerusalem with a candle. This is the day in which he will he is to cleanse his people from sin and sinners. It is the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Malachi 3:1-5. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Yahshua whom you seek shall suddenly come unto his temple, even the messenger of the covenant, whom you delight in. Behold, he shall come, says the Yahshua of the host. That's the Holy One of Israel, Yahshua, the Son. that who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appears. For he is like a refiner's fire and like the fuller's soul. And he shall sit as a refiner and purify the silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as the gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahshua or Yahweh the Father an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of the Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Yahweh, as in the days of old and as in the former years. And I will come near unto you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the idolaters, and against the false spirits, and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the strangers from his right, and fear not me, says Yahshua of the host. Should we not now consider ourselves as the most fortunate people in the world for the knowing of these things beforehand? Shall we not be glad and thankful for the having been warned beforehand that we have come almost unto the time of the harvest, and that we have been given the opportunity for the making ready? For it, shall we not be glad that we are not left in the darkness, and that we are now plainly shown that these are the closing hours of the pre-harvest period, which is in the 10th hour and 11th hour, that the harvest will soon begin in the 12th parabolic hour when it opens, and it's already opened for 21 years now. Revelation 18:1. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from the heaven, having a great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. For the fulfillment of this scripture is what is called the loud cry of the third angel's message. But note that the whole earth is lightened with his glory by the fifth angel of Revelation 1 that cometh down, and the judgment of the living time and the harvest time. The three angels only flew in the midst of heaven during the judgment of the dead time from 1844 to 2003. Let us now take notice of what happened after the three angels' message permeates the earth, after the earth is thus lightened with the glory of the angel that comes down in Revelation 18:1 that joins itself to the three angels. And that's the fifth angel. And Revelation 18:2, and he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, the great, has fallen, and has become the habitation of the devil, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. After the earth is lightened, then it is that the Babylon falls plainly. Then Babylon has not actually fallen as yet. In fact, Babylon has not even come into existence yet, for she is yet to mount rule the beast, the world. See Revelation 17 and chart number 12. The world yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Revelation 18:4. And I heard another voice from the heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sin, that she receive not of her plague. For this voice from the heaven, you see, comes unto the Yahweh people after the earth is lightened with the loud cry of the angel of Revelation 18:1. For the burden of the voice is that Yahweh's people should come out of Babylon so that they be not partakers of her sins and not receive her plague. If on this account they must come out of Babylon, then it must be that the place into which they are called to come is free from the sin and thus free from the danger of the plague. And where could that be but in the purified land and church of the Yahweh? That would be at the starting point here in Texas, where there is no more sin and no more sinners to endanger the peace of Yahweh's people. Vain indeed it would be if the people were called from one place of the sin and brought into another place of the sin, as clear as a crystal. That is, that the purification of the church, the cleansing of Daniel 8:14, judgment of the living, and the 12th bread by the God that we're in now, 1 Peter 4:17, takes place before the loud cry of the third angel that is joined by the fifth angel that gives it the loud cry and message begins in the world, before Yahweh's people are called out of the Babylon. For the third angel's message is for the lighting of the earth with his glory, that only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted for the action of a part in the proclaiming of the third angel, the fifth angel's message, when it shall have joined the third and swells into the loud cry here in the last and 12th parabolic hour. Okay, most Christians know that there are two classes in the church, wheat and tares, but few, if any, seem to care. We as the reformers, though, especially since we have been given this great light on the subject, cannot afford to be indifferent. We must now intelligently choose to be wheat or choose to be tares. But after knowing this truth, some choose to be the tares. They will have gained nothing and need not be surprised when they land in hell. At the time labor and chapter are in a clash, then it is that the Jerusalem, that's the present tense church of Israel, house of David, shall be searched as it were with a candle. Notice that. Actually, this church is the Seventh Day Adventist church. Searched with the candles, consequently the men who have settled in their houses, those who act as though the Yeshua has forsaken the earth, will have their punishment. Not only do we behold and feel the day of the Yeshua's approaching, but even here is story. This brings the third verse. Said this hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.